Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to Scream Queen, a podcast about scary movies.
From people not typically depicted in scary movies. Drea, we're back. Season 4, we're in the studio. It's been a really long time. The last time we were in the studio was literally right before coronavirus. Do you remember that?
The day before.
Yeah. And we were talking about like, oh, we'll sanitize with White Claws and shit. That came back to bite us in the ass.
I still support White Claws.
That is the only support of white power. So we're back in the studio. We're reintroducing our show with three segments that we had in the first two seasons. We've got some new segments for y'all, like Damn Bitch, where we talk about particularly gruesome kills.
So, Miss Christy Angus as Adrian in Jason 10.
One of the most iconic kills of all time. I thought about doing this sequence, Damn Bitch, whenever we clock anybody who dies in an iconic way, because there are so many cool kills in scary movies that we might never even get to, because we might not want to even talk about that movie. And Jason X is one of them, because Jason X is a mess. This was at a time in the Jason saga where they were like, what do we do now? We've taken Jason to Manhattan. We've taken Jason to hell. Where else could we take him? Space. And Drea and I were recently interviewed by the Queer for Fear documentary that will be coming out on Shudder later. And they liked to articulate in the early 2000s, sort of around 9/11, there was this sort of F-150ing, this broification of horror. And I feel like Jason X was right at the boundary of that. It was like right before that whole broification happened. So this was the kind of last campy Jason we got. And it also leaned more into the supernatural, his supernatural origins. Correct me if I'm wrong, but initially, like in the beginning, the government wanted to capture him to try to synthesize some medicine from his body or some shit.
They thought his cells processed in a way that would regenerate body parts and shit like that.
Yeah, so they wanted to turn him into some snail cream or some shit.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting a suspended animation. He went into space. So Adrian is a scientist in a crop top.
she got gloves on in a crop top.
In a crop top. And she's analyzing some cells or some shit, and Jason is lying prostrate on a table. Ostensibly, he's frozen, but we know he ain't. And every time he kind of moves, she does that thing where she's like, turns around, and nothing's there. Turns around, nothing's there.
What could it be?
Turns around, then he's choking a bitch out. Like, there's like a brief struggle before he implants her face into some liquid nitrogen, freezes her face and only her face solid in a very short period of time, and then smashes her face on a cold metal table. So you just see like red chunks flying everywhere.
And it's violent.
It is really, really violent.
Like it was done like kind of too well. It's very, it just kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I think I was 15 when I first saw that kill, and I was just like, that was very violent.
Because, like, you know, you're used to, at this point, people being impaled in various ways by machetes. You know what I mean? Like, every now and then you'll get a hatchet to the face. For whatever reason, like, in horror movies, like, face kills are so much more visceral to me.
Anything to, like, when you're up close and personal with somebody. Yeah.
Sometimes, like, you know, homegirl in Scream 4, when she caught the knife through her hand. Mm-hmm. Like, through hands and through eyes are the ones that really get me. But, like, full face, and we'll get into this later with our main topic discussion, but, like, full face kills, they just do something to me. We're like, that is, because it's isolated on the face. I'm like, mm-hmm. Ma, this makes me money.
I noticed that Jason seems to be somewhat of a scientist because he knew exactly where to put her head at and what would happen if he did that with her head.
I guess we never knew this. Jason Voorhees in a previous life went to medical school.
And I think he would be pro-vaccine.
Get the jab, okay? Get it. So Christy Angus, you're going down as our first
damn bitch.
All right, Drea, do you want to get into our main topic discussion this week?
Oh, yes. Let's do this. It's Fear Street, mm-hmm. 1994, 1978, and 1666. Ooh, you see what they did there?
I would have liked it was 1669, but that's just me.
So. I know. They really missed that opportunity
there. They
took
it out for a horny bitch, so.
So, Tommy.
These shits were good.
Very.
The Fear Street trilogy came out on Netflix, kind of piecemeal. I watched them as they came out, like the day they came out, each one, not knowing how interconnected they would end up being. And then recently went through and watched them all at once. And it's a pretty solid trilogy.
Yeah.
I think you have reservations about the first one.
Had. Yeah.
From its being kind of derivative of some kills that we have definitely seen. I also think it went in a direction that was unexpected, refreshing, and neutered the patriarchy.
Exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself. My reservations that I will maintain about this film, the opening, that was not an homage. That was a straight up Scream ripoff. Like, I was so confused.
They killed that lady the same exact way they killed Drew Barrymore.
So many things were exactly the same about this, that whole opening sequence. There was too much going on that was too similar.
That is Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter.
And she got dead real good.
Vocabulary.
Thank you.
I didn't read anything about this. I didn't watch any trailers. I didn't listen to any podcasts. So I came into the Fear Street trilogy completely dumb. As you started watching it, what were you expecting? And were those expectations surmounted, perverted, put off? Like, what happened to you as you were watching it?
My expectations were met and then some. Yeah, I was super duper impressed with this film. Like, the practical effects, the storyline, the fact that it actually really does cohesively tie together. You don't have to watch all three parts to understand the value of each individual film. But when you watch them interconnected, it's a whole viewing experience. It changes it for you. But yeah, I mean, they nailed all our classic horror films that we grew up loving. They got all that campiness, like, literally down. And not literally down. That sounds stupid.
Like, I want to be down.
I want to be down. They got all that shit down. And there was one thing I read out there. I try to avoid reviews and shit like that as much as I can. And they talked about, like, it was exploitative towards teenagers, but that was the fucking point. That was intentional.
What, like, does that even mean?
They're saying, like, that they sexualized teenagers.
Oh, my God. Have you seen American cinema in general?
All? Yes, exactly.
Horny kids at sleepaway camp, get it in. Mm-hmm. We have been knowing this since at least the first Friday the 13th, if not The Burning, and before. Mm-hmm. So, come on now. I will say I was disappointed that nobody hot had sex. I wasn't turned on by any of the men in any of these movies. I can't think of a single one where I was like,
not that sheriff, nobody.
No.
Not even your doppelganger, Tommy?
Bitch, woo! That murderous son of a bitch. No. Here's what I will say. Okay, let's go through 94. Because I did like it, but I was perturbed by the fact that the two friends lived so long, I thought they were going to survive.
Yeah, that was the main thing that I had my reservations about. As a whole, with part two and three, it works for me, that death.
Well, I will say what is notable about this film or this trilogy is that the Scream Queen, the final girl, is a lesbian.
Yeah.
And We've never seen this before. We've never seen a lesbian woman helm, or I don't know how the actress actually identifies, but in terms of the character, a lesbian helm a trilogy, a horror trilogy.
And
like
Latina.
Man, Latina. And it was really refreshing to see that the roots of the Sarah Fear curse, which they always said it was the witch of Sarah Fear. She was the one who put this curse in motion, but it wasn't her. Mm-hmm. It was man. It was mm-hmm. a man. It was dirty, grubby men who resented her lesbian relationship in 1666. Mm-hmm. Could have been 1669 if you ask me, but it was 1666. And that really you see how the suppression of women and of different sexualities, how that crimination, like, you can't suppress it. It just comes up in different ways. And it can come up in, you know, because it's like, we've been oppressed, but we've always been here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so some things like the protests that happen or laws that like that they seem like, I don't know, that they bubbled up from, they bubble up from somewhere very particular. They bubble up because we have been oppressed and suppressed and silenced for so long that it's like once you get a platform and a microphone, bitch, I'm going to yell. And I feel like that's kind of what this was saying, that like Sarah Fear had been, her memory had been maligned for so long that she had been seen as a witch and somebody who was cursing the town when all she ever wanted was to be free, mm-hmm. you know? Iconic Kill, 1994, the friend, the cheerleader friend who gets, what was that? Was that a sandwich machine? What was it?
It was a bread slicer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Talk about a face kill.
Oh my God. Oof. Yeah, talk about getting hit.
That, that one sticks with me.
Again, it happens at the end, mm-hmm. technically. Mm-hmm. When you look at it as just one film, mm-hmm. it's completely out of left field. Mm-hmm. And normally you would not do that, have these friends make it all the way to the very end like that.
Because they had almost died several times.
Uh-huh.
Like, at the times when they almost died, that was like the beat that they would have died in a normal 90-minute
yes,
scary
they
movie.
They wouldn't die 15 minutes, 20 minutes in, you mm-hmm. know? But to kill them like that, it really, it fucks with you.
It fucks with me.
Yeah.
Because I thought, oh, these are the homies. Like, they're going to ride. And
They didn't. One other reservation I had, just a quick one that they slipped in there that was not okay. There is a scene where a homegirl is babysitting these two twin black girls, and she has them divide up these pills for drugs as fucking Snoop Dogg or something's playing in the background. And she's like, yeah, just, oh, don't take that because, you know, it'll fuck you up. But she basically makes these little black girls drug dealers. And I just, and then they don't make any acknowledgement towards it. I'm just like, I caught that shit. It was not okay.
That was, yes, that was a misstep, babysitter.
Big misstep. I mean, director or whoever wrote that into the script. Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about the 70s one, the camp?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
I thought that is an homage. That is how you do that. The way that they showed the Nightwing killer or the origin of his character, the way it all comes to be, is it's really fucking cool.
And we get to see the lair mm-hmm. a little bit. Why did that short-haired girl touch that goo? I don't get it.
She was drawn to it. That's the only way I can explain it. But the way they show it is just like, ooh, goo. Let me put my hands on it.
this isn't a kill, but a brutal injury that always gets me is when somebody falls on their ankle and their bone pops out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and of course she's running around screaming, not helping the situation. And then she breaks her goddamn ankle. Mm-mm. And then her big butt breaks the bucket.
So we find out that the lair of Sarah Fear, a part of it is above the outhouse of the camp. And so you could put a bucket down the toilet and grab some people. Here is a glaring inconsistency, and I made you go back and forth when we was at your apartment
she's
to watch this.
She's just up in there, but I know what you're gonna say.
So the redheaded stepchild, the main character of the camp version of Fear Street, is a much maligned, you know, girl. She's from the Stranger Things mm-hmm. trilogy, and. She has like her main enemy in one of the popular girls, dark-haired popular girl, and her come to blows in the outhouse. Redheaded stepchild knocks her out, and then we never see her again. She doesn't even get killed.
Yeah, well, you know, they I don't know why they say everybody died at that camp, because not everybody died.
A lot of them got away on that school bus.
You see where she is. She's just knocked out in the back. And that's all. And they just leave her in that stall. But I was like, she's such a bitch. Why didn't they kill her?
We didn't get any redemption.
Well, we did. They locked her in the outhouse for a while, and they put all those bugs on her, and she completely... I mean, that was supposed to be enough, technically.
Yeah.
For her burning her and tying her to a fucking tree.
I just did not get her extreme vitriol. Was she just, like, jealous of that red hair? I don't know. She does have some nice hair.
It's very nice.
She has some... It's brushed.
It's coiffed.
Okay, so... I liked the camp version of this. I was satisfied, I guess, with the kill. Oh, but they kept killing babies. They killed so many children.
The three kids with no lantern killed.
The boy with the glasses. Oh,
killed.
God. Poor little boy.
That was really mean.
I mean, at least but they didn't show it on screen, but like you saw people discover the dead kids. And I was like, this is a bold choice for a young adult novel turned into a film.
I mean, they fucking went for it.
They really did.
I mean, it's Fear Street, so it's they're allowed to kind of go that far. It's not Goosebumps.
Right, because you know? Fear Street was like the, if you were kind of bored with Goosebumps, you did the Fear Street or the Christopher Pike bullshit, right? And this was like a little bit more, because in Goosebumps, nobody really dies. Like, very rarely. I mean, the kids get scared, but they never really die. But Fear Street, you were like, I'm going to read somebody die.
Yeah. It's like ghost cheerleaders and shit like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, spooky.
Christopher Pike and the Midnight Club and all that bullshit.
Midnight Club.
What I didn't like about the second movie, homeboy does CPR to save the redheaded stepchild. Like, I'm sorry. Like, if she had maybe... been drowned and submerged. You could do CPR.
In the chest.
She was stabbed in the chest by that.
I think he set a spell to her. I think that's why she survived. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. I think in the third film they show that he says something to her when she's dying. There's no way like CPR.
Chest compressions don't work on stab wounds.
No. I'm pretty sure it doesn't work. I ain't no doctor, but.
I ain't got no degrees, but I can tell you chest compressions do not work on stab wounds.
Yeah. I mean, and that whole knife attack in the field with her and her sister.
Oh, that was brutal.
So crazy.
That was brutal. Beautiful and brutal.
Yes.
Brutal. I just made up a new word. Oof.
Best way to describe that. Oh, and then homegirl who broke her ankle, she got stabbed in the back. She got stabbed in the front after she had her back turned.
What I liked about that, because like I loved, so short haired girl with a broken ankle was initially at odds with redhead stepchild's big sister. But it turns out they had been friends when they were children, that they had become estranged because redhead stepchild's sister was like a perfectionist and all this kind of stuff. But I liked the fact that they redeemed their friendship during the course of the film and they came together at the end, even though they both ended up dead. But I liked that character development for them. I liked that they rekindled their friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. And then it was really shitty when but nobody was safe. And at least that was pretty clear. Like, nobody's going to make out of this alive.
That's the thing about that sort of, I don't know what kind of irony it is, like dramatic or otherwise, but it's like the one where going into it, we knew no one was going to live. Mm-hmm. Because that's the way that, what's her name from Community? Whoever the actress was.
Like, yeah, I forget her name.
But she told the story to these kids and she was like, yeah, this is nobody left. My sister's died. My sister died.
So Jillian Jacobs.
Yeah, so we knew that everyone was going to die. How did you feel about 1666?
I thought I wasn't going to like it, but I was like, oh, straight up, this is The Witch or whatever. But minus homegirl's accent. Oh, that was interesting.
You didn't have to go there. But.
Oh, I could. Yeah. It was there, so I said it.
It came out of her mouth and into my ears. So.
Minus, I was able to get past that because the story was that interesting. Like, I forgot that her accent wasn't that amazing. Mm-hmm. Or like, that some of it didn't even quite make sense, you know? Like, her brother being there and his accent. It was just, it didn't matter. Because it was, again, the story was strong enough.
It was like Bridgerton comes to Fear Street.
I also like that it halfway through, it splits into something else. And then we're back to 94, which is really cool.
How did you feel about how they did... Again, this trilogy is really comfortable killing children.
Oh, so you're talking about the church.
When they get to the church and all them kids' eyes got scooped out or whatever.
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah. I mean, the killer montage that they go through, there's like Billy Baker or Billy Barker who killed his brothers in their sleep with a bat. And then there's the milkman who went crazy and he sliced some housewives to death. And yeah. And then they go through that priest who lost his mind and then gouged his eyes out and everybody, all the kids' eyes out. It's really, the visuals are really, really intense.
Anytime I see a period piece set in the 1600s, like you said, The Witch or something like that, or The Crucible, I'm just waiting for everyone to turn on the women.
Exactly. I was like, when's this going to happen? When are we stringing up witches?
Yeah. When are they going to blame this on a bitch? Like, it's always coming. I feel like that's the threat of movies set at that period because, you know, whether it's like a metaphor for McCarthyism or whatever, it's still like female power is seen as abhorrent and needing to be curtailed and like needing to be like snuffed out, right?
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just in 1666. What you see is that in every era, there that type of suppression exists. The redhead girls getting persecuted in 78, and then you've got homegirls who can't live and be together and exist from Shadyside to Sunnyvale, you know? And so it's like it never goes away in some way, shape, or form.
That was a little bit Riverdale to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the South Side and the North Side or whatever. Like, and I got that like 94, because I remember 94. 94 was shot and depicted in a way that was a little bit nostalgic, but very current. Like, it reminded me of the bathroom scene in Booksmart or movies like that, where they take place, they're contemporary, all gender restrooms, like very progressive, like da 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 da. And I felt like 94 was shot and conceived of that way, but it wasn't actually 1994, because like I remember 94, that shit was homophobic as fuck. Like you wouldn't be men and women's in the same restroom, like that wouldn't happen like that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's cute, they're taking liberty with certain things.
Did you suspect, because I started to suspect after the first two movies, that cop was into some shady shit?
Yeah, there was things that they alluded to from the very first film. I was always looking at him. I didn't know what it was going to be, but yeah, he looked suspect.
He was sus. Did you suspect the twist that it was him and his line that were the focus of the magic and all that kind of stuff?
I saw it coming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, not like long before, but it all added up and I was like, I think I know where this is kind of headed. So I wasn't surprised that Sarah Fear she wasn't behind it all. It was that motherfucker.
How did you feel about like this sort of post-racial 1666?
Again, that's what I'm saying. Her brother being there, and I'm just like, what is happening? Y'all are just being off kind of willy-nilly with it.
You know, it's so mixed-ish. Like, it was like, okay, so you're going to pepper in some people of color in this every now and then? Like, we're not going to address slavery, but we can have a couple brown faces in this, I guess.
Yeah, we'll address homophobia, but not slavery.
An interesting American legacy, to say the least. So in sort of the middle to three quarters through 1666, we get back into 1994. How did you feel about its ending and coming back into the quote-unquote present? Like, how do you feel like that was dealt with?
Great. Yeah, it all worked. Everything was encapsulated quite well. I was surprised at how good these films were. And it just means that there's more good shit on the way. The practical effects, I can't get over, like how there was a really good balance between that and whatever, you know, special effects they threw up in there. Like it was never too overdone with the special effects.
What I get, so I'm working on a show right now and they're talking, I'm in like props meetings, and they like to do practical effects when it comes to like puncturing wounds, but they don't like to do practical blood because it's harder to reset. So oftentimes what you'll see is the puncture is practical, but the blood is VFX. Because like it just takes too long to clean up when you have to do another take.
Yeah.
And I understand that.
Yeah, they used a mix. I think mostly that was all practical blood. Like I think for the most part. But yeah, I mean, it's messy.
Yeah.
It's super fucking. And like John Wick, not to get too off track, but like they were able to get away with a certain rating because of how they shot. You know, people were getting taken out, but the blood didn't. It looked like a video game. It didn't look like.
Oh, that's like Black Christmas. Remember, because that was PG-13. Mm-hmm. They had that. They had the whole mystical thing that the blood was black.
Yeah.
So they could get away with PG-13.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, if you make the blood look fake, you know, the way it splatters and all that, then it just it takes you out of the moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there are ways to do it, though. I have seen it done very well.
How do you think the Fear Street trilogy stacks up against other contemporary horror films that indict the patriarchy? And I'm thinking specifically about the new Craft movie and the new Black Christmas.
Well, this film, these films succeeded where those films failed.
Absolutely. Yeah. The indictment of the patriarchy didn't feel as shoehorned in as like the Craft and Black Christmas kind of felt. I always felt like that, like that's what they were going for.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, I got fun story, cool characters, awesome kills, and then that. It wasn't like it was. It didn't feel. It didn't feel preachy. It didn't feel like it was an afterthought. It felt deeply ingrained into the premise of the film without mm-hmm. having to come out every 5 minutes and be like, message. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Again, you didn't even know it was going in that direction until way later into the films. So, yeah, it's unfortunate what happened with those other two films. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they exist, and they, you know, and it just means that they can try it again if they want to, or make something new. Yeah. You know, like this, make something different. You don't have
not
to
everything
remake
has
it.
To be IP. We don't have to do a remake or a reboot. That's again what I really, really appreciated about this is that it was something new.
Yeah. You can't be completely original. Mm-hmm. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in certain genres, especially like in this horror genre, like, no, you're pulling from things. That you're inspired by other people. That is what brought you into this whole genre to begin with. So, yeah, like you have to pay due or recognize those that came before you.
Right. And there's a difference between being inspired by and being derivative of.
Mm-hmm.
And these films felt very inspired by. And as a person, you know, who loves horror, we do a fucking scary movie podcast. Like it really pulled on three distinct types of horror, right? We've got the slasher, like the small town slasher. We've got the camp. And then we've got, you know, the witch thing. And those are all, those have had their heydays. They all come from very different time periods. So it was really nice to get a contemporary spin on those and to feel both nostalgic, which is what they were going for, but then also dilated. Like, I saw something new. You know, I saw something fun. And some of those, like, oh, God, they killed so many children. It was just some of these things I did not, like, I have not seen before of the sort of supernatural serial killers. Did you have a favorite or one that you thought was most scary? Because that baby face looking thing was, that took me out.
Yeah. 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 I mean, they never showed what the Humpty Dumpty killer looked like. But I wonder what it, but that sounds really scary.
You can make that up. You know what it looks like in your head. It'll look good.
It'll look like a big ass egg. They all looked really awesome. The girl with the fucked up face and the blades, mm-hmm. she was cool. Mm-hmm. But no, the little boy and the milkman probably scared me the most.
I don't do that.
How about, so for you, it was?
I mean, because the dude with the bag on his head, I mean, that's, we've seen that before.
Yeah.
In other horror movies.
I mean, that's Jason.
Yeah, Jason and what was it, Town That Dreaded Sundown, some other things like that. Like, yeah. They've got like the bag face killer.
But it was right.
But its incidental origin I thought was really cool. And just like little things like that were definitely VFX. I think that were VFX, but like him breathing, you know, his mouth impression on the bag, I thought was
really
cool.
Well, when she pulled his face mm-hmm, and it imprinted, you could see his eyes sunken in. And yeah, all the like the mold of his face, that's when it became like, it changed him or something, because all of a sudden he could see through this.
Yeah,
he was guided by something else.
All right, Drea, we've gotten into the third act of our show, our Scream Queen of the Week. Do you want to announce?
Celeste O'Connor and Misha Osherovic as Nyla and Josh in Freaky.
Freaky! I was not expecting this movie. Directed by Christopher Landon, written by Michael Kennedy and Christopher Landon, two queer men, really lended a queer sensibility to this film. I know they like to say that it's a mix of Freaky Friday and Friday the 13th, but to be honest with you, it was the hot chick. Like, the hot chick, which is a derivative of Freaky Friday, but the hot chick is definitely like pretty girl switches body with like swarthy middle-aged man. And there's even like the in the hot chick, there's like the weird kiss between Vince Vaughn. No, not Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn is the, it was Rob Schneider and like one of those brothers. What are they? He was in Blossom.
Oh, like a Joey, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of his brothers, like they have this weird almost kiss, but it was kind of like that. So I feel like Freaky is a mix of the hot chick and Friday the 13th. What did you think of this one?
Well, I did not know you were so well versed in the hot chick. Let's start with that. that's a different topic. Mainly just with these characters, I appreciate that at least Nyla, her character, was just a normal, regular black girl. Mm-hmm. Josh, on the other hand, they went all the way stereotype with him. Like really? That person doesn't exist. Like, that is not a real person.
Except when the homophobic football player kind of takes him aside and is like, you want to get on this? I was like, I have been in that position.
That's real. I believed
times.
That moment. But the rest of all his other isms and all that, it was just too much. Like, mm-hmm. he was already naturally funny. And whoever wrote for him, it felt like that they weren't queer.
So you're homophobic, is what you're saying.
I'm coming out as as a homophobe. I'm announcing it on the podcast. I'm a queer homophobe.
You know what's interesting about Freaky is that tonally it's very specific, but it to me it rides a very thin line because it is silly but also quite brutal. Like, I was not expecting the severity of the kills. That first scene with that lady when he is smashing her head under the toilet seat.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, the first scene is actually the bottle down the throat and then smashed into the neck is the first scene. Ooh. And then it's the head underneath the toilet. Those two are already just... And then homegirl gets... After she gives you the Sarah Michelle Gellar or you think she's going to make it. Mm-hmm. And they also did... It was kind of a Scream comeback where the parents are walking up the driveway. Uh-huh, uh-huh. It's like, Mom and Dad. And then he picks her ass up and... Impales her. Yeah. I wasn't super surprised by the killings in like Fear Street because I guess I've been seeing this leading up because this like for example this film like mm-hmm. there was violent as fuck. Mm-hmm. It was very bloody. Like I think almost every single death in this film is really nasty.
I was gonna say the only one that I didn't really that it was more silly than violent was when he puts that girl in the cryo chamber.
Yeah, that was stupid. Yeah. And I wanted her to go out way worse than that.
I did too.
Yeah, she's sucked. But that was kind of similar to the one annoying girl. She didn't even die. She just got put in an outhouse. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't... I wasn't completely... I wasn't blown away by the character performances of Nyla and Josh. I gotta be honest. Like, they have some moments, and mm-hmm. I really like how... the friendship works. Mm-hmm. And mainly, you know, they live.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like in a different movie done with different hands, they would not have survived. They would have been on the chopping block. They would have been fodder. Mm-hmm. But I liked the fact that, I mean, they only ever were support. You know, yeah. They were nothing but support. They didn't actually have internal lives. They weren't actually characters unto themselves. But I did appreciate that they lived to the very end.
And you know what? There were some genuinely very good moments. Like, I found all their banter between them to be very, it was very funny, very believable in a lot of ways. I just, some of it felt very forced to me.
Yeah. Well, there was a moment I feel like that was very self-referential when he's like, you're black, I'm gay, we're gonna die, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and they had to do that. One of the gnarliest deaths in it was definitely the guy that was hitting on Josh. Mm. And then he was like, if you say anything, faggot. Fucking kick your ass.
I was transported back to high school myself.
Oh, yeah. It was just like, oh, wow. So original.
The amount of times I've been in a situation where the homophobic dude ends up turning out gay, I'm just like, you are so obvious. You are so, those who say that shit with their whole chest, they want to get it in the ass.
Oh, so bad. They're desperate for it.
They want cock.
But when his ass gets hooked through the wall by homegirl, homeboy, that shit is so good.
That was good.
You know, and anything that goes right, like hooks in the eye or anything in the eye is just.
Didn't like it.
I bet you didn't.
I mean, I appreciated it, but I didn't like it.
I know that. Yeah, I'm sure that made you squirm.
Also, so what was the artifact that...
That knife that... Yeah, I forget the name of it. But
in The Hot Chick, Angie Stone has store in the
Angie
mall.
Angie Stone is in
She has a store in the mall where she has these earrings that do the same thing that, what's her name? Homegirl from The Notebook and Mean Girls, the blonde one. She steals them and then Rob Schneider gets one and she gets the other and then they switch bodies.
Amanda Seyfried?
No.
I don't know.
The main one. Anyway.
Oh, that chick.
Yeah. All them blonde girls kind of muddled in my mind.
I like that chick, though, the main mean girl.
Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
Yes, I like her. Yeah.
You said The Notebook, and I immediately thought of just not that. Just another white girl movie. This period piece.
The Postman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think as characters, maybe not totally satisfying, but what I like, again, what I was encouraged by was that they lived to the end. The performances were great.
They were really great.
She did great, both being that wimpy girl and a homicidal maniac, and he did a great job as a homicidal maniac and a wimpy girl.
Her friends did a great job supporting this out of a completely wacky situation, whacked situation. I don't blame the characters. I blame a bit of the writing. You know, but I like the people playing these characters. I just think that there could have been more there. I just wanted some more depth.
I think there probably was. What I'm starting to understand now is that that like studios and executives want it in a certain amount of time. And so pages of dialogue get cut.
Character development
gets cut.
Yeah.
Like, because if you're focusing on one person, if they don't have, if it, tangentially it doesn't really have anything to do with the main character, that shit gets cut. Because it has to be under a certain like runtime, and there's money and there's, you know, people who want to make it on time and da 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 da. And it sucks because I want to see the director's cut. I want to see if there's anything we were missing from those characters, you know, because I feel like there was more there because I think they were played as by the actors. They were played as well as they could.
But there might have been more backstory. Again, you don't need a whole lot of backstory, but it's just I wanted to understand. I'm greedy. Give me what I'm asking for.
Well, I did hear a rumor because like this was made by the same company, by the same people as, and I think written by the same person did Happy Death Day to You.
Yeah.
And so there's talk of these two worlds merging in the future, like the Death Day series merging with the Freaky series. So we might see these characters again in the future.
Which would be very smart. That's another example of, you know, great original horror coming out today is Happy Death Day. But yeah, I would love to see these people show up in some other universe. That would be fucking dope. So thank you for listening to our Scream Queen this week. We wanted to say a quick shout out to Celeste O'Connor and Misha Osherovic. Y'all killed it overall in Freaky.
Yep.
You did what you needed to do. Let me appreciate it.
I am Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at Hey Teebs, HEYTEEBS on Instagram because I've deleted Twitter.
And I'm Drea Washington. You can find me at Hey Girl Hey. That's HEYGRLHEY.
And we're produced by Kenya and Alex at Domino Sound. And in the scary movie of your life,
you better
scream, queen.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.